I think the fear people have is, you know, oh, I'm going to get radiated. I'm going to become X-Men, you know, yeah, kind of thing. Would it be cool to be X-Men?
Hi. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Bite Angle. And I'm Dr. Bernasu. And this handsome guy here joining me is Dr. Daryl.
So not so handsome.
And our resident periodontologist.
Yes. So
periodontist?
Well, you see, right? Can I say all this?
Yeah. We can just talk. Yes.
In Singapore, the this is rule, right?
So yes.
I have to pass the Singapore board exams first.
Yes.
Yeah, before I can say I'm a specialist.
Oh, okay.
I've done the American, I've done the Canadian board.
Yes.
Going to clear. I'm hoping to clear it in September this year.
Yes.
The Singapore boards.
Okay. So you have specialized training.
Yes. Yeah. Then I can officially call myself a specialist.
Okay. Good. All right. So unofficially.
Yeah, unofficial. Yeah, something like that.
Yes. Okay. But your focus is into gums. Yes?
Yes. So, as I tell my patients, I treat the pink and my colleagues treat the white.
Ah, yes, that's a good one. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
So yeah, very happy to be here.
Okay.
And talk a little bit more about pink stuff.
Sure. So give us an idea of your background. Like what kind of, you did touch about your studies and you did your undergrad in Singapore.
Singapore, yeah.
Yeah.
So I finished my bachelor's in 2012.
Yes.
And then I practiced as a general practitioner for about 7 years.
Okay.
Before, you know, it's a 7-year itch.
Oh, yeah. Really?
So, yeah, I just had to go scratch it. I don't know. Decided to just go back to school because, I don't know. I think along the way, just kind of realized that I have a lot of unanswered questions.
Mm.
And, didn't really know why I was doing what I was doing. It was more like, all right, I'm doing what I'm doing because this guy said so, you know.
Okay.
It was more like a how kind of thing. And
right.
And I really wanted to find out the why.
Okay. Especially with gums.
Yeah, with gum surgery, with gum disease. Mm. I think that was the thing that really intrigued me because, you know, for other things, I knew why I was doing what I was doing. It's just that specifically for like gum disease management, I didn't really know, you know, why I was doing things.
Yes.
And then I decided, you know what? I think it's, my why was strong enough that I needed to go back to school, and just pursue this full time.
Mm.
And that's how I ended up in, Columbia.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I spent 3 years in New York.
Okay.
That was a pretty fun 3 years. Mm. Because it was during the time of COVID. So I got to experience lockdown and then New York being the first one to reopen. And, it was fun because I was there walking, you know, in the streets, right? And, family back home here, we're all like, oh, it's a circuit breaker, you know, everybody's on lockdown, nobody's allowed to go out, it's Food Panda this, Grab Food that, and there I was on the other side of the pond, right?
Yes.
You know, I was roaming free. The streets of New York, free and easy kind of thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was a good 3 years, you know, learned, really, really a lot of things because I think people do things a little bit differently on the other side of the pond, as compared to, you know, here. So it gave me a really good perspective of both sides, you know.
Got it.
Because I think, Bernard, you agree with me that any medical or dental kind of, you know, condition, there's never just one way to treat it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Well, of course, if it's a heart attack, you have to, you know, revive the heart. That's the
yeah,
way,
exactly.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
But for most conditions, I would say most things are, you know, there are multiple ways to look at it, right?
Yes.
And I do think, you know, as a clinician, I do think it's important to get exposure, to know that, there are, you know, multiple ways to do something. Right?
Yes.
It's not just one strict way.
Yes.
So I think going to the States afforded me that opportunity.
Mm.
And you know, for that, I'm really grateful.
Yes.
And then I've been back here since 2022.
Yes. Mm. Okay.
And my practice right now is pretty much limited to just, you know, gum disease management.
Yes.
Implants, anything to do with the pink.
The pink, yes. The bone. Yes, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that is truly the foundation of our teeth. And I think a lot of times for the lay people, they, and I find this more in Asia. I don't know about you. So it would be very good to get your perspective as what you saw over on the other side of the pond. But I did a lot of my training in Australia and I grew up there as well. But when I came to Singapore, what I was very shocked to see was that the level of periodontitis that I see in Asia is actually greater than what I saw back in Australia. In
right.
My general observation, so I don't have numbers for it, but I saw a lot of dental related problems, but a lot of perio problems go untreated here.
Mm-hmm.
So I sometimes see quite a number of patients that come in and they have sometimes been seeing a dentist quite regularly throughout their lives, but some of them have never had a proper professional cleaning. Like they will have a filling done from time to time or maybe perhaps even just a checkup, but not so much cleaning. Yeah.
Right.
So they don't even know the basic level of gum care. So,
right.
Have you seen, have you observed a similar thing or it's something that is maybe changed over time also?
Well, I mean, I do think that there is, I do agree with your observation, in that locally, a lot of gum disease does go, you know, unnoticed or undetected. Right. But it's a little bit of it's a chicken and egg kind of thing.
Mm.
So let's start off with the patient first, right?
Mm.
So from the patient's perspective, because majority of the time, gum disease is silent, right?
Yes.
You don't get any pain. You don't get any symptoms, you know, but the destruction is ongoing, right? You get a mild, you know, bleed every now and then when you're brushing your teeth.
Yes.
But by and large, you know, it doesn't really affect the patient's life until the disease is at its terminal point, right?
Yes.
And the tooth is shaky.
Yes.
And then they come in and you're like, hey, doc, you know, it's wobbly.
Yeah, and sometimes it doesn't even hurt then, right?
Yeah. They're like, you know, I can still eat majority of things, but you know, if it's something hard, then I can't.
Yeah.
But by and large, you know, life is okay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you tell them like, oh, it's a, you know, it's a, you know, this is very severe bone loss and there's nothing much I can do. Mm. And they're like, what? Right? Yeah.
So, yes.
And from the patient's perspective, you know, there's no real push in that sense to want to do, you know, anything simply because it's silent.
Yes. Yes.
As opposed to say, if you fell down and you know, chipped your front tooth, right? That one, you need to get it fixed straight away because the front tooth is important for aesthetics, it's important for speech, right? So you can't do without it.
Yes.
Now, we go on to the clinician's point of view then. Now, I don't think there's a case of, you know, people being, incapable of, you know, detecting disease. But it's more, I think, what I observe sometimes, personally, right, is with when you try to bring up the need for, say, you know, periodontal treatment or deep cleaning, a lot of the patients will rebut with, well, but I've been, you know, I just had my cleaning.
Yeah, done, yes.
Or
yeah,
I have been seeing my dentist regularly for the past, you know, X number of years.
Yes, yeah.
So why do I need this now?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And how different is it from what they were doing, because it seems that you're just going to use the same machine, the same instrument, right?
Yeah.
So to that end, you know, from a clinician's point of view, it's like, how do you, you know, what do you tell the patient? Like, how do you, you know, well, yes. sell it to them?
Because, yeah, yeah.
because you see, well, again, gum disease, it's a problem with the bone, right? And, and we as humans, we are very visual creatures.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? What we cannot see, we think it's not there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
What we can see, like, you know, the broken front tooth.
Yeah.
That's there.
Yeah.
That one you have to fix,
yes.
right?
Yes.
But the problem with the gum disease is that it's, everything's on the inside, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. If there's no symptoms, if there's no visual, and it's not there.
Yeah.
So from a clinician's point of view, then it becomes, you know, pretty difficult to, in a sense, convince the patient that, hey, you need to do something. Right?
Yes.
And so they don't do anything, and then, you know, things just deteriorate with time.
Yes.
And then when they land in your chair or my chair,
yeah,
you're like, oh, right? And exactly. then the patient says,
exactly.
Oh, but this guy didn't tell me, you know, yeah. it was that severe. They just told me that I had this, but they didn't tell me it was that severe.
Yeah.
But then becomes a case of, all right, were you really listening?
Yes.
Or, you know, or did they not?
Yeah, they downplay just, it, you know, or yes.
Yeah, kind of give up because every other patient was like you.
Exactly, yes. Right. No, it's true. And that is basically the experience as a general dentist that I find even the... So I tend to nag them about the
right.
the process of the gum disease. But the thing that I find very useful now is that I speak to them using the biofilm disclosing gel, right?
Right, right, right.
And because, again, plaque is mostly, unless it's very, very badly discolored and they really don't brush their teeth, but a lot of people moderately are quite good with their oral care. And the other thing that I need to broach with them is that it's not only oral care that is the factor to having gum disease or not, because I don't know about you, but I sometimes see the confounding situation where a patient has not come in to see a dentist in 10 years, cleans the teeth once a day, maybe, no gum disease, right? And then you have another one who's immaculate teeth, but very severe gum disease.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about severe gum disease, that we are looking at bone loss mm-hmm. around the teeth, mm-hmm. right? And there's a lot of inflammation around the gums. And so I think to your point as well about the why, I think the most confounding thing for me in dentistry is actually the gums. Because mm-hmm. there is so much relationship to the host, right?
The human being.
And what they eat and mm-hmm. their lifestyle as mm-hmm. well, that plays a very big part. So, and I think it is very exhausting for like a practitioner to speak to someone about it. And, especially if the person is not very receptive, right?
They yeah.
go, oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay. So you're telling me that I need to change my lifestyle. And then 6 months later, same thing, right? You don't see any change. And then, yeah, then like you said, it doesn't
register.
Yeah. That's yeah. a good word. Yeah. To the patients. So I think the patients that you end up seeing are probably the ones that have already registered yeah. and have moved on to the next level. Because I do get this when I end up referring to a periodontist and then I say, look, you know, if we see that we cannot manage your pockets, and I try to give them a quantification. So I say, if more than 4 or 5 areas in your mouth that is greater than 5 millimeters, I would like you to see the specialist, especially if we are finding out that even with our care and you are improving your oral health status and your oral hygiene, that we don't see an improvement
mm-hmm.
with the pockets,
mm-hmm.
right? And is it right to say that that when the pocket is greater than 5 millimeters, we have a different type of microbiome that we're dealing with?
Yes. So in general, I think you can take it that, yeah, the deeper the pocket, the more anaerobic the environment.
Yes.
And then the more pathogenic or more virulent kind of strains
yes.
of bacteria there are. But I mean, we now know it's not it's not just the bacteria that is the cause of it. You know, it's exactly like what you mentioned, right? It's a play between the dysbiosis of bacteria versus the host modulation of, you know, the inflammatory process,
yes,
as well as the, you know, the immune defense system.
Yeah.
So, in general, yes, the deeper the pocket, the worse off the bacteria. In terms of numbers, so how I usually explain to my patients is that if your pocket measures, you know, 1 to 3, which is physiological, all right, by and large, most of the time you can keep it clean because we know your toothbrush and your floss can go down to say maybe 1, 2, you know, I wouldn't say 3, but you know,
yeah,
right. So you can keep it clean. So long as you keep the top clean, the bottom part doesn't progress. The bottom part doesn't get dirty in that sense. Then we come to the 4 to 5 region. So the 4 to 5 region, it's, I like to call it the gray zone, right? It's not exactly the red zone, but it's not exactly in the green zone either. So the 4 to 5 region, you know, you can kind of keep it clean, but you need a bit of professional help. So that's when they come and see you and I, you know, say every 3-4 months instead of say every 6, you know, to 9 months, right? And, that's when, you know, we help them clean that 4 to 5 area if they've missed out any part of it.
Yes.
The problem comes at 6 and below. So so when it's 6, 7, 8, that's when neither them nor we can reach that area, and then it becomes a bit of a red flag. And you know, okay, what do we have to do to reduce the pocket?
Yes.
So I mean, in terms of treatment, largely, the way I describe it is you either, you know, you have a pocket this deep, you either subtract or you add.
Yes.
Right? So either way, the pocket closes. Yes. Right? So adding is in the form of regeneration. So you regenerate, you know, bone, right? Subtracting is in the form of resective, basic atomic efficiency. To put it crudely, cut away the excess gum.
Yeah, right.
But, okay. I mean, we are tending to not, you know, go down that route so much nowadays because
the cutting the gum.
Yeah, because the resective route has, I mean, inherently it will create quite a fair bit of recession.
Right.
And you lose attachment around the tooth. So in terms of trying to get back physiological mobility, right? Or rather in trying to get back stability of the tooth, you really, it's not helping that cause at all.
Yeah.
All right. Whereas regeneration, you know, you're trying to grow back the attachment. And in most cases, I would say, you know, if you can grow it back to the point that at least, right, the tooth has like 80% of attachment left, the tooth becomes firm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. As opposed to when it's 50, 60% loss, right, the tooth is like, you know, mobility 1, 2 kind of thing. So,
Do you see in your practice, does bruxism increase the acceleration of bone loss?
You know, it's a very, very interesting question. You know? Very, very interesting question because it's a little bit of a yes and no. And I don't think this has been thoroughly explored or thoroughly researched in the periodontal community yet. How so? Okay. Let's start off with how physical trauma, because bruxism in the sense it's trauma to the teeth, right? It's a form of overloading.
Yes.
The same thing, right? You
same way as orthodontics, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly that, all right? So you're basically applying force to the tooth beyond its physiological acceptance. It's the same as, you know, your knee can accept only so much force, right? If you're going to squat, you know, 500 pounds.
Yes.
Right? you be better be sure that your knees can.
So you're going to talk about progressive overloading, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. So, okay. So we start off with what we know first, right? Mm. So we know from the traditional studies that mobility, or rather excessive force or trauma from occlusion, to be precise, will exacerbate any ongoing periodontal inflammation, right? Mm. If there is no inflammation, then what you would see is just the tooth becoming mobile in the form of, you know, the ligament space widening.
Yep.
But there is no loss of bone.
Mm.
Of course, it will come to a point where if the force is ever increasing, then of course the bone will give way in the form of the tooth fracturing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
But if the force is applied and it's still within what the bone can accept, then what you would see is just mobility of the tooth without loss of bone structure.
Yep.
Now, then we come to the part about when there is actually inflammation around the tooth and you apply a force in the form of, say, braces or, I mean, orthodontics, or in the form of bruxism. Then what you do see actually is an exacerbation. In other words, it's not, the inflammation does spread like wildfire. The whole thing kind of unzips. So that's what we know. Now, clinically, what we see, right? So if going by that notion and going by, you know, your original question about bruxism and periodontitis, then it would make sense that, you know, you, if somebody who is a very severe clencher, very severe bruxer, they should have extremely bad periodontal disease.
But not always.
Yeah. What you
actually very rare, actually.
What you do find is that they have huge bony structure, huge bony shelves,
yes,
pori.
Yes.
Right?
Exostosis.
Exostosis everywhere and no periodontal disease. But what you do see is some wear of the tooth surface, right? You see wear of the tooth surface, thick bony structure.
Or even cracks in teeth.
Correct.
Yes.
But no attachment loss. No loss of bone.
Yes.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Indeed. Why? Yes. Right? To be very frank with you, like I said, right, there's no hard evidence for this right now. This is just my personal observation. I think that because, you see, the human body works in a way whereby it's formed to function, right? If you go to the gym, you do 1,000 bicep curls, you're going to get biceps the size of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So same thing. If the patient or the subject, you know, is always crunching, grinding, right?
Yeah.
The body would then think, all right, the bony structure needs to be stronger.
That's right.
In order to accept or receive this prolonged or excessive amount of force.
Yeah.
So how does the body do that? Well, the only thing that can be changed is the bone structure, because the tooth cannot change, the ligaments cannot change.
Yes.
Well, the other thing that can adapt is the bone structure.
Mm.
So the bone then becomes really, really robust, you know, really, 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 really thick, right?
Yeah.
To the point that it just resists any kind of bone destruction.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So that is the only,
Yeah, that's been my observation too.
Yeah, that's the only hypothesis that I can think of, right? But of course, in terms of the cellular level, I mean, in terms of like, you know, you talk about, you know, the cells or rather the signals that generate bone.
Yeah.
Right? All these things, I do think that there definitely is a scientific explanation or a physiological explanation for why, you know, patients like that with, you know, very severe bruxism don't.
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't say don't, but you don't see that often that they have very rampant, you know, periodontal disease. Now, on the other hand, then you have the other subset of patients who also kind of grind and, you know, brux, but the way that their occlusion is arranged is that when they go into, you know, lateral movement or excursive movements, they end up just, you know, kind of guiding on one single molar.
Yeah.
Right? Usually these kinds are the, you know, occlusally dysfunctional.
Kinda. Yes, yes.
I won't say they're abnormal. I mean, they're perfectly well human beings.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
They're eating, they're speaking, they're running, they're doing everything. But it's just that their teeth are not aligned in the ideal format, right? And to the point that, you know, when they go into excursive, they kind of grind or rather guide on one single molar. And oftentimes they come in and they're like, you know, this tooth is shaky, right? Yeah, and then you take an x-ray and you see bone loss.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, by and large, they are, I wouldn't say they are the cleanest as well. They are, you know, high oral hygiene is...
So there was a baseline inflammatory process going on, right?
I would say that,
right?
You know, it's kind of moderate to poor, you know, kind of state.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself, like, well, you have 28 teeth.
Why is it just this one?
Your hygiene is poor all around.
Why is this this one? Yeah.
There are some signs that, you know, you kind of grind or whichever. But why is it that...
Yes.
Why is it that one tooth that is having such severe attachment loss and everything else is not?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense, right? The bacteria in the mouth from the upper molar is the same as the bacteria in the mouth of the lower molar.
Yeah, for sure.
It's the same as the bacteria in the mouth of the premolar, right? So why is it this tooth is getting... Why is it getting beat up that much, right?
It's pure physics, right?
Correct. And then it boils back down to, you know, they're grinding, but how are they grinding, right?
Vector force.
Correct. Mm. The traditional grinder or clencher, very nice class one occlusion, and they're grinding to the point that they become grouped function.
So yes.
Everybody accepts or everybody bears the load.
Yes.
But this other subset, you know, these are the guys which are...
Individual.
The entire weight of the whole masticatory function is sliding on one poor guy.
Exactly.
And then that guy gets beat up.
Yeah.
So,
then it's not so much about the force, but the pressure that the tooth is under, right?
I guess pressure, force is a subset of pressure, right? Because pressure equals to force over area, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So it's over the area. Yeah. So, actually, my area of interest is reconstructive dentistry. So what we often end up doing is that I'll say to the patients, we cannot necessarily practically or realistically reduce the force in your mouth. You know, your chewing muscles are already this strong. So what we want to do is just make sure that we have more legs to the table or just spread the load out as much as possible. That's where the splinting comes in. So, which is a segue of my next question to you about what do you think about, you know, when you are treating a patient that have multiple loose teeth? When and how would you consider splinting their teeth together to stabilize them while they have ongoing treatment? Or is it now a more accepted process where you just go, well, you know, these teeth have mobility 1.5 to 2. You just, you know, cut your losses and put implants in.
Okay. Wow.
Complex question.
Yeah, this is going to be a long answer. Okay. So let's set the groundwork first. Right?
Yeah.
So we know, again, mobility or trauma form occlusion or mobility in that sense is basically any kind of movement.
Yeah.
Right. Will exacerbate periodontal inflammation.
Yes.
That means
there
has to be inflammation first and then you add in mobility and then the whole thing goes. Yes. Like
but if we are trying to, at the same time, reduce the inflammation but stabilize the exacerbation problem of further mobility, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other concept. Before I get to your question proper.
Yeah.
The other concept that I give or paint to my patients is that, well, I always ask them, have you ever broken, you know, your leg or your hand or whichever, and you know the doctors put you in a plaster cast, and you keep the cast on for like what, 2 months, 3 months. So why? Because now the fractured segments have to be stable in order for bone to fuse.
Yep.
Right. It has to be immobile. Right. So that same bone is no different than the bone in your mouth.
Yep.
So if the teeth are constantly kind of, you know, moving and the teeth are housed together by the bone, how do you expect this bone to heal? Because right now, the periodontal disease is a problem of the bone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if this keeps on moving, right, this guy will have no chance to, you know, stabilize and ossify again.
Yeah.
So stability is key.
Mm.
So now I come to your question proper, right? Mm. So, you know, what do I do with mobile teeth? You know, how do I, what is my approach to them? And, well, when is some kind of stabilization needed, right? Okay. So I divide it into the singles and the multiples, right?
Yeah.
So we talk about the local situation. So a lot of times, especially say like lower anterior teeth, right? You know, patients have very, very severe loss, you know, just on maybe like the lower centrals. And the common complaint is, well, I cannot chew kway teow.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I want to incise in my front teeth, but I can't because the teeth are shaky, right?
Right.
So your question about, hey, you know, what do I do? Do I stabilize them? Do I splint them? Do I take them out?
Yeah.
You know, replace it with implants. Implants are firm as hell. You're going to be able to chew whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right. So first up, I mean, these kind of patients usually, I mean, because of the prior history of periodontal disease, right, inherently they are more susceptible to peri-implantitis than say somebody who is not.
Mm-hmm. Because of the ongoing inflammation issue.
No, it's just a host issue.
Yes.
In other words, if you have a history of, okay, locally, the way I explain it is, you know, Chinese say, right, 比较发热, you know, so much easier to get inflamed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, which is true.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yes.
Right? So, because the host itself has a higher risk of, you say, contracting periodontal disease and by the same coin, peri-implantitis.
Mm.
All right. A lot of times for periodontal patients, we try to, you know, if possible, say avoid giving them implants.
Yep.
But if I don't give them implants, then what am I going to do about these two shaky teeth? Right. I mean, I can clean them until the cows come home, and you know, pockets are going to be stable, everything and all. Right. But what do I do? Right. Because number one, the shaky teeth results in inability to chew.
Yep.
The shaky teeth also, now, if the patient, again, forgets to clean, right, or misses out the area, you know, there's a bit of inflammation, and the shakiness is always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it going to mean? It's going to mean that your periodontal inflammation is just going to go.
Yep.
Right? Mm. So controlling the mobility is also one key aspect of any periodontal treatment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for these kind of patients, then what I do usually, it's, you know, we splint, we put a fixed wire on the inside of the lingual from canine to canine.
Mm.
All right. So it kills two birds with one stone.
Yep.
Number one, three birds, all right. Number one, the patient avoids surgery, the patient avoids having to, you know, extract the teeth.
Yes.
Right. Number two, the tooth is stabilized. So in other words, I eliminate the mobility factor.
Yes.
The mobility aggravating factor.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So right now, all the patient needs to concentrate on is just keeping the teeth clean.
That's yes. It. Yep.
And number three, right? Aesthetics, right? So the patient doesn't walk around without a missing tooth at any point in time.
Yeah.
So I've done quite a few of these, you know, cases, and it's worked out really, really, really well.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, of course, someone argue that, you know, hey, the wire behind, it's not exactly the most hygienic, you know, prosthesis, right? Of course, some would argue that it's even, you know, temporary and all. But the way I see it is, you know, these kind of patients, they have a lot of recession.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
A lot of black triangle spaces.
What you can do, you can use your interdental brushes to kind of go in between, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to rely on the floss.
Yes.
So, if for whatever reason, all right, there is no way to stuff an interdental brush in there, then yes, right, if flossing is the only way to keep the area clean, then yes, putting the wire might not be the best idea simply because hygiene cannot be maintained.
Right? Which then will lead to further inflammation.
So that's that. Then if other local situations, so for example, right, like we talked about the patient that grinds on a single molar, right? So now, again, it's a problem with the bone area, right? So for the best chance of the area to heal, all right, and if the tooth is already mobile, say mobility 2, right, then a lot of times after non-surgical, means after the first initial phase non-surgical therapy, I actually put a wire, say like 7-6-5, right, just on the buckle at the back, you know, nobody can see because it's all the way at the back, right? so the stability, again, two purposes, right? It helps with the healing. It helps with the patient in terms of chewing as well, right? Now, in terms of the nocturnal grinding, because nocturnally there's going to be forces. You can control the day force, but nocturnally you cannot, right? So that's where the mouth guard comes in. So that one as well, another key important aspect, because, you know, for these kind of deranged occlusions, right? What are you going to do? Like, how are you going to prevent a patient from grinding on their one molar? Right? You have to go through orthodontic treatment to realign the teeth to get a mutually protective occlusion.
Yes.
Or the quick way, put them in the mouth guard.
Yeah.
Right? And then create canine ramps such that they, you know,
get the load off that tooth.
Correct.
Right. Yes.
So these are the two kind of local situations that I mostly, deal with, right? Now, when you talk about generalized, right? Generalized. Now, say multiple mobile teeth, and then the question becomes, right, what do I do with them? Do I extract it all out, all on four, all on X?
Yeah.
I know that's the flavor of the period nowadays, right?
Yeah.
So again, we go back to basic principles, right? So these patients, right, because of the history of periodontal disease, it doesn't mean that if you take out everything, you know, implants are going to be the be-all and all. No, they're not, right? Patients still can get peri-implantitis from that.
That's right.
So then what? Do we keep the teeth? So, you know, it's not popular, right? It's not popular, but in the 80s and in the 90s, before the advent of implants, before implants really became popular.
Like, yeah.
I mean, implants were present then, but they weren't that popular.
Mm.
So what people in Gothenburg or in Pennsylvania, right? So these are the two places that really popularized this periodontal prosthesis.
Oh.
Yeah, it's called the periodontal-prosthesis, right? So the patients usually come in with generalized perio, right? And of course, you know, one or two of them cannot be, you know, salvage because it's bone loss to apex. But the rest of them, all right, they're like 20% bone left.
Really? Wow. Okay.
30% bone left.
So, right? Blowing in the wind?
Kind of.
Almost.
Almost, right?
Like a grade 2 mobility, right?
Now, so the concept is this, right? Teeth individually are mobile.
Yes. I call it picket fencing.
Yeah, yeah. You can move them, you know, as in however way you want.
Yes.
Together.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Just kind strong. Of
strength,
yes.
Strength in numbers, right? Yeah, so what people used to do, right, strategically they would have, you know, they make sure that the patient has teeth in strategic locations, right? So like, you know, a couple over here, a couple over on this side, a couple on this side, you know, and a couple on this side. And they just do a roundhouse prosthesis and they cemented it.
Right.
So that's how the concept of cross-arch splinting came about.
Yes.
So when you splint something from the left to the front to the right,
yes,
the teeth cannot move. From mobility 2, it becomes mobility 0.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you want to move, so you got a roundhouse like that, right? If you want to move, if let's say you're biting and you want to go move something to the front, the back is going to resist. If you want to move something this way, this side is going to resist.
Yes.
If you want to move something this way, this side is going to resist.
Got it.
So you see how it's such a brilliant concept.
Yeah.
Right?
That it's called all on all.
You know? On your natural teeth, right?
Yes.
So it's such a brilliant concept because you you achieve all your objectives with just this one thing, right?
Yes,
get the patient teeth back. They don't have to go through surgery. You eliminate the mobility. They just have to concentrate on keeping everything clean. You know, and in those days, you know, people really didn't care, you know, much about what the patient wants. they just care that, okay, I'm going to make it high and dry.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to make the prosthesis high and dry.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you can stuff those huge interdental brushes in between the contacts and the gum. And
what did they used to use? Metal, right? They used to use a cast metal.
Yes, cast metal, which actually arguably is very difficult because of the warpage and the shrinkage during the cooling process, right? But anyway, so they did all that. It solved so many issues. The problem actually is that the patients all look like horses.
Yes.
Because the teeth are very long.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
I mean, you can imagine in today's society how, you know, that would be outrightly rejected because, you know, everybody wants to look good.
Mm.
Right? Everybody wants to feel good, look good. So imagine if you propose a treatment plan and tell them, I'm going to keep all your teeth, but you're going to look like a horse.
Mm.
Right? Yeah.
There's no way of making it aesthetically.
It all kind of again goes back down to
how much,
you know, what is the patient's lip line,
how high is it,
and stuff like that, right? So, there are many factors to consider. So,
true.
So for those patients who have, you know, usually they are a little bit elderly and they have very, very bad gum disease.
So their lip line is
really low. So some of them don't mind, you know, but,
that's
for
tricky.
The most part, those people who have a kind of moderate or even a high lip line,
it'll look awful.
It's a straight out no from them, you know?
Yeah.
But that's it, all right? I think, if I'm not wrong, I think somebody, I can't remember the year, or maybe the last couple of years, somebody did a 30-year follow-up of, so these group of patients, right? These group of periodontal prosthesis patients.
Yes.
They were first, this bunch of them, they were first done in Gothenburg, Sweden, right? Back in, I think it was 80s or the 90s, around there. And then every decade or so, right?
Got popularized.
Every decade or so, they had a follow-up.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's crazy because I'm pretty sure it was in the last couple of years, somebody published a 30-year follow-up.
And results?
30 years. Yeah, it's still there.
Very good.
It's still there. And it's insane because if you ask anybody to give you a 30-year follow-up for an all-on four prostheses, nowhere in sight, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Because I actually, interestingly enough, you mentioned that Pennsylvania, right? That was also popularized there.
Yeah,
because I had a patient from Pennsylvania, and I had tracked him for about 12 years when he was living in Singapore, and he had splinted, like a metal splint, from his, mainly the lowers, but, from 5 to 5.
Mm.
And, I mean, his oral hygiene was impeccable. It was great. And, he was, I think, one of the best people to clean his teeth because I think someone trained him to actually take care of it.
Yeah.
But it was extraordinarily good. I mean, he had only about 20% of his bone.
Yeah.
But he said it's been there for 30 years.
It's crazy, right? Yeah. So it's just testament to how, you know, resilient like the human body is.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, oftentimes I don't go out, you know, proclaiming this because it's you're telling our dental profession, you know, to give teeth a chance, right? You know, just give it a chance. You know, don't be so quick to to, you know, remove teeth because, hey, I mean, you know,
it's still your teeth.
Essentially, our job is to save teeth.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, of course, until a point where it becomes impractical.
Yes.
Or it's just, you know, for example, like trying to deal with a vacation 3.
That's
not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know,
nobody can clean that. Yeah.
I mean, you can do tunneling, you can do premolarization and stuff like that, but trying to treat or regenerate, you know, a Focation 3, that's wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, that's so, right. So when do you cut your losses, right?
Yeah, correct, correct, correct. Yes. Correct. So when you cut your losses. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, very good. I wanted to ask you also about what are the main... I think we did touch on this already, but are there some main misconceptions about gum disease that you think a lot of people get wrong?
Main misconception.
Mm.
Main misconception. Main misconception. Wow, that's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
I can tell you what other misconceptions around gum disease.
Yes, so yes.
We talk about oral hygiene.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Right, so, you know, a lot of people think electric toothbrush, once they get it, that's it. Teeth are going to be 99.9% clean, as what all the advertisements proclaim, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Or the other one. But every night I use a mouthwash.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How come this, I still have gum disease?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
So,
because it's not 100% bacterial related also.
Okay, so it always, you know, I think all my gum disease patients know this equation. Bacterial teeth equals the disease.
Yeah, yeah.
No bacteria, no disease. Or no tooth, no disease.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So it always starts off with bacteria. I mean, yes. let's assume everybody wants to keep their teeth, right? Yes. Let's assume everybody's going to keep their teeth. All right? So it always starts off with the bacterial cause, and rightfully so, because the definition of, you know, periodontitis, right? It's a bacterial initiated, host mediated chronic problem.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So bacteria initiated. In other words, you have to have bacteria first. So then it all comes down to, you know, the whole idea of controlling gum disease, it's actually controlling the bacteria.
Yes.
And how do you control bacteria? It's through oral hygiene every day, right?
And controlling bacteria means not necessarily getting rid of them completely, but to manage their population. Is that
correct? Correct. Because we can, yeah. So we can never, ever get rid of bacteria in the mouth. It's there to stay. And again, all of my gum disease patients have heard me, you know, talk about this cycle.
Yes.
Every day, everybody goes through this, right? You wake up at 8 o'clock, you have breakfast, you have lunch at 12, you have dinner at 7, you brush your teeth at 11.
Yeah.
And when you brush your teeth, whatever bacteria is accumulated throughout the day, it goes back down to zero.
Yeah.
Or rather, zero. Oh, yeah. Right? Or you bring them down to 10%. To a low level.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
The next day, the cycle starts again.
Yes.
8 o'clock, 12 p.m., 7 p.m., brush your teeth at 11, down to zero. Every day, this cycle has to repeat itself predictably every single day.
Mm.
The problem becomes when you have... You ate a whole day, you have an accumulation of plaque and bacteria the whole day, and you forget to brush, you don't want to brush, you cannot brush, you cannot reach your area, right? Basically, you do not brush the bacteria away. Then you allow bacteria to further accumulate. And it will come a point, where these guys start to create havoc, right? Or they start to create inflammation. All right, and then the chronic inflammation, because the inability to remove them results in chronic inflammation, results in disease.
Mm.
So it all starts with getting rid of bacteria. Now, the misconception here, electric toothbrush, mouthwashes. So it's really not about the toothbrush, right? It's always about the technique.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I can agree on that, right?
Yeah.
And there are studies to show, right, large Cochrane systematic reviews to show that between the efficacy between an electric toothbrush and a manual toothbrush, absolutely no difference. The difference comes in somebody who has dexterity issues. So somebody who has Parkinson's disease, you know, you can't really control your hand, or somebody who's just, you know, elderly and not, look, you know, motor skills not as good as somebody who, say, was 18 years old, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when the electric toothbrush will help. So that is, you know, misconception number one. Misconception number two is the mouthwash, right? but you know, I heard this brand said that, you know, it kills off 99.99% or
Yes. Okay.
You know?
Yes.
You know, I really wish, you know, we as dentists can come out and say, come out to say something publicly about this, right? Because it's just, it's
you
not
are.
True.
No, it's not true. Yeah, it's not true, exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So the analogy I give my patients is that, you know, when it rains outside, you know how the surface layer of, you know, mud, salt gets washed away?
Yeah.
99.9% of it is still left behind. That is exactly what the mouthwash does to bacteria. It only removes the surface layer.
Yes.
Whatever that's underneath, it's still there.
The more dangerous stuff.
Exactly. Yes. And arguably, the more pathogenic ones are down below.
Yeah,
so mouthwash only, you know, it only does that, right?
Yes, yes.
When would I use a mouthwash? Okay. Things like immediately after surgery, right? Where you you cannot brush and you need help at least trying to control things or keep things at bay, right?
Yes.
Then you would use a mouthwash, right? Or, I don't know, if you forget to bring a toothbrush, right? Hey, rinse rather than...
Something
rinse,
to
something
disrupt,
better
yeah.
than no thing, right?
Yes.
And the other time, I guess, I don't know, when you want to feel... fresh?
Yeah. So it's not completely useless, but it's not the be all or end all for sure. Yes. Oil pulling. Oh my goodness.
Oh,
let's not get started there.
Oh my. Okay. No. Oil pulling. Oh my goodness.
Yes. We could go on and on about that, right? Some of my patients do go on and on about it. But, yes, it's, it's exactly right. So very good point that you've brought up. Very last question before we end it. I wanted to ask you what if you had an advice to give your patients to know about gum health, what would be the main thing you would want to say to them? As
let your dentist check your gums, all right?
Yes.
I know it's it's an archaic process because it hasn't changed since the 60s till now.
Yeah.
Yes, it's 80 years. No, 60 years already. But, you know, they use this instrument to kind of press around your gum area. And yes, I understand. It's not the most, friendly or comfortable thing to do.
Or sexy thing to do either. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But it gets the job done. It will immediately tell your dentist, you know, whether or not you do have any gum issue. So, you know, just bear with them. They're not out to cause you harm. I promise you. They're not. I know I tell my patients, listen, my finger's in your mouth. If you're not happy, you can bite me. All right. So, so I should be the one who's scared, not you, you know?
Right.
So let your dentist check your gums. And the other thing, you know, let them take the x-rays. All right.
Yeah.
They cannot see what's underneath your gums. They cannot see what's going on in the bone. That's why the x-rays are there. I assure you the amount of radiation is minimal. It's almost,
yeah, it's nothing. It's 1/50,000th, apparently.
Yeah, you know, it's like one of those small films. It's very much equivalent to you standing outside in a few days, right?
Yeah.
Because
and it's less than a flight.
There is background radiation. You taking a flight from Singapore to say the UK or even to New York, right? Yes, that alone it's a lot of radiation,
yes.
Right? Way more than what you get in the dental clinic.
Got it.
So you know, I think the fear people have is, you know, oh, I'm going to get radiated, I'm going to become X-Men, you know, thing. Would it be cool to be X-Men? But anyway, point is, you know, let them check.
Yes.
All right.
And check in a regular fashion, right? You know, just be routine and consistent about.
Correct.
About everything that we do.
I think that's really the best advice I can give. And I mean, other than what every other dentist will tell you is, you know, brush your teeth.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Floss.
Floss. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Floss. Yes. Floss.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Very good. Thank you, Daryl.
No, thank you, Brad.
Yes.
Very nice.
And this has been very enlightening, I'm sure, for our audience as well. So thank you very much.
I hope so. All right. Thank you, guys. See you.
Till next time.
Yes.
See you.